Welcome to Sailing Through Life, a journey to health, happiness, and living your dreams. My name is Lori, and I'm your host. What do you do when you feel like you're being pulled down in life? If you're ready to try something new, to take the plunge, dive deep inside yourself to discover who you are really going to enjoy listening to my guest today, Megan Warren. She is here today to help us understand what it means to seize the day. She found herself stuck after a divorce, a life-changing diagnosis, single motherhood, and living alone in a foreign country. She shares her story about her decision to start a new life. Megan is a self-leadership coach and a motivational speaker. On her journey to self-discovery, she realized she was going through the motions, feeling overwhelmed and unfulfilled. In this episode, we'll learn how we can look inside and resolve the conflicts we are facing, to take steps to feel less trapped in our emotions and become more alive. With understanding, practice, and grace, we can achieve a life of satisfaction.
Looking back, I see it as the thing that saved my life and say I lived a fulfilled, satisfied life because I have changed the course of my direction that I would not have if I didn't encounter that adversity. And so it's looking at that kind of stuff and then giving myself grace. You can learn these skills. They're all scientifically evidence-based and they are life-changing.
Join me as we set sail on this adventure to discover ways to take care of yourself, find the positive in life, and continue to dream, even when going through some of your darkest days. Listen to my inspiring guests as they share their stories and give hope to help you on your journey. It's time to feel empowered. It's time to make every choice count. Today's episode is Seize the Day. In this episode with Megan, we'll be learning about the importance of really feeling our emotions and riding those waves and using life-changing skills to help us heal and move forward in life. Please welcome Megan. Thank you for joining me.
Great to be here. Thank you very much for having me.
Well, today I wanted to talk about how to make our lives work for us, to seize the day, to take advantage of what we have going right for us, and to perpetuate more of that. And I wanted to get a little bit more into where you started from so that the listeners can understand how you seize the day, what you did to take advantage of the things that were happening in your life and to switch that or to flip the script, I think was the term you used when we talked earlier.
Yeah, it's funny. I think I started out like, well, certainly a lot of people in the States. I mean, I come from a middle-class background. I went to good schools. I got an education and I'm really grateful for that. And so then I started up that path of checking all the boxes, you know, where you graduate, you get a job, you get married, you have a baby, you do all those things. And, you know, when you get the job, you get promoted, et cetera. And so I started checking the box without even kind of thinking about why I was doing that. And, you know, sometime in my late 20s, early 30s, I began to say, I'm still waking up every morning and I just want to be part of the mattress. But I got the promotion. I got married. Like, what is wrong with me? And I would cry because I had no idea what I was doing wrong. And I had done everything the book said, right? I read every self-help thing I could find. And, I started to make some changes, but it wasn't changes that were necessarily positive because I was sitting down and, you know, critically thinking about things. I was making changes in reaction to emotions that were guiding my decisions. So they were very much fear-based decisions in the moment, you know, so I walked away from my marriage. And that kind of broke up in general. And then just started taking jobs that came my way rather than, you know, actively sitting down and saying, what works for me? And I think I always managed to make a go of it or a success because I was taught to be strong. You know, you put your head to that grind and you just go, go, go. And then I had my son. After getting divorced, a couple years later, I met someone and we moved in together. And so I got pregnant. And during the pregnancy, that relationship did not work out. And so I, you know, it's kind of ironic in that one of the reasons that I never wanted to have children in my marriage is because I was under the impression, wrongly, which I find out later, but that I would have a child, like I would have to raise a child alone. And so it's kind of amusing that life gives you exactly what you're trying to avoid. Oh, but no. In some ways, it has been, not in some ways, in all ways, it has been the biggest blessing of my life because it was the crux, the pivot point. Life gave me the pivot point, and then I was able to change my life. I think what happened is I hit kind of rock bottom in that time because I'm a very hard-headed learner. You know, I will bang my head against that wall thinking it's going to be different until I hit rock bottom and realize I can't do it. Something has to give. And so, you know, in my head, the perfectionist that I was 100% my job. And then I had a baby and I was supposed to be 100% a mother too. And how do you be two people? And so at that point, I was still struggling through it. I did not give up. That was still not my rock bottom. One of my rock bottom moments was receiving my son's diagnosis that he had autism and realizing there was a bit of relief in that first moment of, oh, it's not just me. I'm not just a stupid mother who can't do it. There's something else going on, something medical. And of course, then the perfectionist in me thought, well, we're just going to fix this together. We're going to do all the research we can possibly do. And we're going to get on board and we're going to put this in place and he's going to be fine. And it didn't quite work like that. And so, you know, altogether, I think at that moment, I hit the rock bottom because I couldn't do that and be the mother and the amount of therapy he needed, as well as do 100% my job, which involved, you know, between 20 and 40% travel, depending on the year. So it was at that moment that I realized I had to do something differently. And that really kicked off the journey that I was on today. And so, you know, I would credit my experience with and my comfort level with nasty, dirty emotions, because I never liked them, and my resilience to having to go through this. I think being a survivor of something, of anything that life throws at you, it's invaluable. And so I use that experience along with the training that I did to become a life coach in, you know, the work that I do with clients.
What did you do to move from that overworked, just drowning feeling to feeling empowered and finding a fulfilled life?
Oh, well, that's a very long story. I will break it down a little bit in terms of, generally, I would say I first started accepting that I had emotions and that they were messages. They were telling me things about myself that I needed. They were telling me things about myself that I should listen to. And then I started making decisions based more around the emotion, not because of the emotion. Because I think a lot of times when you make decisions, it's those knee-jerk reactions, right? Whether you're filled with anger or fear. Right. But sitting down and actually learning to accept, tolerate the emotion, welcome it, and then get curious about it. Because all the emotions come up, and behind each emotion hides a need. And if you can get comfortable with the emotion, then that emotion which comes up and is big, right? It becomes smaller over time. And it can be time within, you know, a couple of minutes. It could be time within a couple of days. Whatever the length of time is that you need, you accept it, you sit with it, you give it space. And then when it becomes small enough, you can see the need that it was hiding. And you can get curious about that need. And then, you know, I think that, along with I had to release a lot of self-judgment, lot, and learn to practice a very uncomfortable thing for me, which was almost as uncomfortable as learning to sit with the emotions, which was releasing self-judgment and practicing self-compassion. I was not raised to give myself self-compassion. It was more like self-pity. It was viewed as self-pity, kind of. Strong people didn't need self-compassion or self-empathy. And so I think, you know, reversing the course on the emotional work, kind of reversing the course on the judgment and giving myself self-compassion were probably the two biggest key things. And then the third piece, I think, was self-acceptance. You know, I had always been motivated by sort of the psychology, emotional pieces when I was younger. But in the world that I grew up in, there was a lot of, you know, jobs where my parents came from a background where, you know, they needed to be financially secure. So you would pick a job, not based on whether it made you fly and your heart sing. You picked a job because it created financial security. And so you could be a doctor, mm-hmm. you could be a lawyer. There was also a bunch of credibility tied to what options were available and that would be accepted. And so, you know, I went that direction without questioning anything because of the fact that what I was kind of interested in, nobody else wanted to talk about. Who wants to talk about emotional stuff? So, you know, I think the self-acceptance piece was a very big part of my journey as well. So those are the three things I would credit is the emotional work, releasing self-judgment, and then on the flip side of that, practicing self-acceptance and giving myself empathy.
And do you think that growing up with the personality you had and the family dynamics that you had, that to survive, you became neutralized to your emotions, that you lived everything very shallow, where you just kind of numbed yourself so that you didn't feel the highs and you didn't feel the lows? You just kind of stayed status quo because that way you were just functioning and doing what you had to do.
Yeah, I would say that's absolutely right on target. I think I would probably call it disconnection because I think numbing is a form of disconnection. But essentially you disconnect with yourself because in some way, whatever it is feels unsafe. And so for me, actually, emotions felt unsafe. I think because I learned, you know, my parents weren't good with emotions for various reasons. My father had a very traumatic childhood. So I think that's where a lot of his stemmed from. And my mother grew up with a very rigid framework. And then she also, you know, when she went through a series of hardships in life, she locked it up. She became strong, you know, like Iron Woman strong. And because of that, we never saw the soft side who breaks down and cries when she needs a hug because she's so overwhelmed and so tired, but she must have been. You know, when I went through my divorce, there were lots of days that I couldn't get out of bed and I just laid in bed and sobbed. And I never once saw my mother cry when she went through her divorce. And my ex-husband is a beautiful person. And so going through that divorce, I think, was probably easier than what my mother experienced because my father had a lot of problems and thus did not make it very easy for her. And so, you know, they didn't really have the emotional space. And so whenever I exhibited emotions, usually that was punished and not in a way of, you know, they're not bad people. I think it happens. It's patterns that we run that happen generationally, and then we just pass them down. They learn them from their parents. We learn them from ours and we pass them to our children. And in fact, that's a lot of the work I do for myself still. Is working on those patterns and seeing how they pass from parent to child. So yes, I would say that learning to lock it up was inherited. It was a way to disconnect. And it was also that it was not safe to be emotionally vulnerable and that got punished.
And do you find that that plays into self-doubt and lack of confidence?
I think it can. I took an emotional regulation test when I started this, or emotional resilience, excuse me, to see kind of where I was on the spectrum of how resilient I was. And I showed up really well in self-efficacy. I think that's an inherited pattern from my parents. They believe if you work hard, you're going to be able to achieve it. And so that kind of thinking, specifically the thinking behind that and feeling like I had the skills to do it, was sort of separate from the idea that I wanted to disconnect. I didn't want to be there. And so interestingly, though, I scored two times below the national average in emotional regulation because it's not something that I learned. So I think, again, a lot of it comes from inherited patterns that you learn from parents. And so I definitely learned to disconnect It worked very well. You know, that idea of losing yourself in a book or losing yourself in a movie,
right,
where to the point where the characters in the book or the series often felt more real than my actual life. And it was a relief in many yep. ways. And their struggles, which in some ways could be similar to mine, were beautiful. Somehow they looked more glamorous than mine. It's been a lot of undoing what I learned and then relearning new ways of being. Is that something, so the emotional piece is something that you find that you do a lot as well?
I think just as of recent, more so the disconnect happens when there's too many things happening at the same time. And it, like you, I strive to do things. I have a, you know, nose to the grindstone, kind of just keep chugging through it. You'll get through it. And sometimes you have to not be in that moment to get through it. And so that's why I was wondering if, you know, when you've disconnected, there's things that help you get through your day when you do that. But I also know that there's a backlash to when you do that, and just trying to figure out what it is that, you know, what I do and how to shift that into something that is more productive, where I can still get through the day, but I'm not feeling or not feeling what's going on. So,
yeah, I think that's interesting that you say it like that, because I think that was also a big skill I had. Put your nose to the grindstone, ignore and move forward. And I think I never really sat down and let myself ask why. You know, why are you ignoring what you don't want to know? And why are you pushing through to get through? Because I think probably you proved, and I proved, that you can push. You have the grit, the stamina. You've got that drive to push through, make it work. But then you get to the end of your life and you look back and you've ticked all those boxes and you put your nose down, you didn't complain and you achieved it all. But do you feel what you want to feel at the end of your life?
How do you feel what you're supposed to feel when you're afraid to feel it?
Well, that is a tough one, because it will depend on why you're afraid to feel it. Some of it could be that it's caused by a sense of belonging. You're afraid to lose your group, to lose your acceptance in the community. I mean, that comes, you know, from way back. It's an evolutionary trait where, you know, if we were kicked out of the group, we could have been eaten by a lion. So it's really built right. into us, both physically as well as mentally. Fear could come from, you know, distress intolerance. You feel the distressful emotion and you're not able to cope with the sensations that it brings up. And then a lot of times, if emotions are only 90 seconds long and they're physical, right? They are actual physical body function responses that your parasympathetic or sympathetic nervous system are giving you. And if it's, you know, that your sympathetic nervous system has been activated and you're in kind of a fight or flight response, of which the worst is feeling paralyzed. You're so fearful that you just lay down and play dead, right?
Right.
A lot of people aren't able to tolerate those emotions, and so they turn away from them, and they numb, and they disconnect in whatever form that takes, whether it's drugs, whether it's busyness, always being busy and never, ever stopping, whether it's losing yourself in TV. Some people use food for comfort. It can really show up in a lot of different ways. And I think the first thing is to sort of recognize what's causing it, kind of increase the self-awareness for what's driving it. And then once you identify sort of what's driving it, whether it's that you can't stand the feeling, and so literally you're choosing not to feel the feeling. The choice that you're making is a fear-based choice just to avoid the feeling rather than a values-based choice of getting through the feeling in order to do X. Or is it because you're afraid of losing your group, your belonging, and so you don't accept something about yourself? And then a lot of times that links right back to feeling distressful feelings, and then people turn away from those as well. So it can be sort of multi-pronged. The ways that you can kind of begin to get more comfortable with emotions and begin to feel them are, once you identify kind of the source, you want to try to reverse it, right?
Okay.
They, in psychology and psychotherapy, they talk about a lot about exposure. So, for example, if you don't like to feel fear, And I actually came upon this recently. I don't like to feel fear, which of course people would say, well, nobody likes to feel fear. That's true. But I actually didn't realize I was not allowing myself to feel fear. There was no permission there. I would block it so effectively that I didn't feel it. And yet the fear was still there. So it was driving every single decision and emotion and interaction with my son, with my partner, with everything. And so essentially what you want to do is become aware. So you increase your awareness. And then once you decide sort of where it's stemming from, the first thing and literally the hardest thing is to make space for it, to sit down and just acknowledge what is. You are powerless against these emotions until you bring them out. Mm. And so when you bring them out, a lot of people are scared to bring them out because then they think, holy crap, if I bring it out, it's going to overwhelm me. I'm not going to be, that right. fear is going to make me fall on the floor. I'm not going to be able to get up. So whatever that difficult emotion is that you feel, the very first step is creating space for it and just acknowledging that that's there. And you can do that in a few different ways. I actually like to do it very intentionally and privately. I have done it publicly. I think because I am comfortable with emotions now, I don't feel embarrassed to cry in front of people, which is 15 years ago was not something I ever would have let myself do. But it's understanding exactly what it is. And then it's understanding that you can, through exposure therapy, you can bear it. It isn't going to kill you. Mm-hmm. It hurts. It doesn't feel good. Ooh, it does not feel good at all. But you know, if you can even just name it one day, and then the next day you can kind of let that feeling creep into your chest just a little for 2 minutes, and then you shut mm-hmm. it away and you disconnect. And then the next day you very purposefully do 4 minutes, and you can even work up to it. So let's say you want to work with fear. You can make a list of things that scare you, and you can start with the things, it's called a fear ladder, for example. And you could make a list and start okay. with the things that you are afraid of, but that are less scary. So maybe spiders, you know, and you can look at some pictures of spiders and that scares you. You know, even that brings up the fear. But you realize through right. the exposure therapy that you're doing with yourself that you can tolerate it and it will be okay. And that essentially is a kind of like going to the gym. It's a muscle that you strengthen over time. And so the other thing you can do that works well, because it combines with another one about releasing judgment, is you can do emotional freedom technique. It's a tapping technique that essentially lets you bring up emotions that are hard to bear and release them. Because a lot of times emotions will come up, but then we don't release them and they get trapped in our body for a very long time. And we never sort of empty that internal reservoir. And if your emotional reservoir or your stress reservoir is full, then when something goes wrong in life or you're faced with a challenge, you feel it in the back of your throat. You know, it's right there ready mm-hmm. to come out. Versus if you've emptied it, then you feel much more capable because it isn't in the back of your throat. And so you feel capable of being curious or seeing other perspectives or, you know, being creative about problem solving things. And so practicing something like emotional freedom technique on a regular basis is very useful. So you can sit down and there's different points to tap. And I'm happy you can Google this and you'll see lots of different videos on how and where to tap. Mm-hmm. But essentially you pick your emotion that's coming up, whether it's jealousy, whether it's anger, whether it's resentment, whether it's fear, and you rate it on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being absolutely, you know, your whole screen is that emotion and you can't see anything other than the color of that emotion. So if it's anger, it's red, right? And and so you rate where you are on that scale. And then you begin tapping on these very specific points on your face and your hand and your chest and under the sides, under your arms. And essentially, those are acupressure points that release tension. And they're also just a way for you to make a physical connection with your body and to be able to say, I accept this emotion. I name this emotion. So I feel fear. It doesn't feel good. It's okay to feel fear. It's okay that it doesn't feel good. And then if you need to, you move on to forgiving yourself for feeling fear. You know, this is interesting because with fear and with lots of different things, I struggled to accept the emotions in the beginning because I wasn't a person. It wasn't part of my self-identity. I did not see myself as a person who was scared. I didn't see myself as a person who, you know, didn't try new things. And so not letting myself be this way, I really had to forgive myself when I felt fear. I felt so angry at myself and I really disliked myself. So in many ways, I had to ask myself for forgiveness because there was the part of me. I do a lot of work with inner child and inner adult, and the inner adult was not pleased that the inner child felt fear. And so there was, you know, a lot of forgiveness going on in both directions, the child for being ridiculed and ignored and disliked, and, you know, the adult for forgiving the child as well, for just needing that, needing reassurance.
Right.
I also didn't see myself as someone who needed help, so I'd never asked for help. So in all of these, in order to be able to make a decision that's not fear-based or ask for help when I needed it, I basically had to accept that I had the emotion, sit with it, learn to tolerate it, release it, and forgive myself for it.
Do you ever find that you have to go back and repeat that? Even if you've started to process that, do you go back? Do you slide backwards ever to have to readdress the same issue? Or do you find that as you do this, you become more capable of moving through it and not getting stuck in that?
I think it's both. My first reaction was, oh, hell yes. Because even recently, the idea perfectionism came up for me again. And because I realized that, you know, when I am emotionally distraught and then my son has an emotional reaction, of course, because my reservoir is full and I'm feeling it in the back of my throat, I'm unable to tolerate or handle and make space for his reaction because I haven't emptied my own reservoir. So I don't have any space in there. And so then it kind of explodes all over him, right? And I realized that when I see progress, right, when I feel less anger or when I'm able to explode less, or when I'm then, as long as there's progress, then I can be less harsh with myself and less perfectionist. But where I don't see progress and I feel like I'm back in the same spot that I was, well, then I don't have any forgiveness for myself. And I think it's a journey of a lifetime, and it's a mastery approach that makes it work for me. It is saying that from every moment in my life where I've had a challenge, you know, I grew up with an alcoholic father and I felt unsafe much of the time. And so I learned to scan my environment and be really in tune with other people's emotional signals, their physical signals, their expressions, in order to predict what was going to happen before it happened to ensure my safety. And that, for me, was a terrifying feeling as a child. And yet it is my superpower as an adult. You know, it's what I use in my work all the time. You know, my son gets a terrible diagnosis, and it's looking back now, in the moment, I hadn't done any of this training. I didn't know a lot of these concepts, and I didn't see it as a beautiful, good thing. Looking back, I see it as the thing that saved my life. I am going to die now and look back and say I lived a fulfilled, satisfied life because I have changed the course of my direction that I would not have, I do not believe, if I didn't encounter that adversity. And so it's looking at that kind of stuff and then giving myself grace. I mean, these skills are learned and you have to practice them over and over and over. One of the funniest stories I heard was there is a nun called Pema Chodron, and her, forgive me if I'm pronouncing her name wrong, but she's an American nun. She's also a Buddhist monk, and she has mastered a lot of these concepts. And she was telling the story about how she came back from a trip overseas to the convent, and she opened a drawer and she saw that the forks were not put correctly in the drawer, and she just lost her shit. And she just went, you know, crazy.
And we're all sitting here thinking, yeah.
Exactly. Yes. But then, you know, you look at her and she's mastered this. She's a model. She's gone years and years and years, and she still struggles with it. So it's not to say, because there was a point in this journey where I thought, I'm unpacking all this difficult emotional stuff so that I won't feel it again, right? And then it was a wake-up call to realize, nope, that is not true. You are unpacking it so that you can learn to manage it, meaning to process it, release it, accept it, validate it, learn what it's telling you, and then use that to help you make decisions that serve your life.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, most people try to make these changes and I think they feel defeated when they go through this cycle and then they feel like they're back to square one. And it's because everything around you is always changing. There's always a challenge. There's always something to deal with. And that triggers some of these feelings. And I know just even in what I deal with, trying to cycle through how I feel and not incorporate everything else into that and not make it worse than it is and try to just sort it out just to even pinpoint one thing and just try to work through that and not overwhelm myself. So I know it's hard and I know that putting that effort in, it will pay off. And I look forward to the day where things aren't so crazy and I don't have to work through so much of the hard stuff and it becomes a little bit easier to process the feelings.
And it does become easier because like any muscle, after you've used it for a while, it becomes, you soften. You're not fighting yourself as much. So, you know, the emotions mm-hmm. arrive and they come in and out almost. And they don't seem so heavy or so big because you know that they're there. You know they're there for a reason. You know they're telling you something. You learned something from it at one point. Maybe you don't see what the learning is right now, but you know you will. You trust that you will because you did before. And you're a little bit stronger each day. But I think a lot of clients, you know, and certainly I did, expect themselves to be perfect right away. And so one of the things, the tricks mm-hmm. that I use that I think clients find useful as well is the idea of seeing yourself as a child, right? If you had a child and that child was trying to master a new skill, you wouldn't punish them. You wouldn't shame them. You wouldn't tell them, you know, just to get with the program or ignore it. You would encourage them. And so I think where we can learn to give ourselves grace and talk to ourselves that way and just say it's normal, because so often we punish ourselves for not doing it well enough when what we really need is a hug. And it's just, it breaks my heart to see clients and certainly myself back when I did it and still do it sometimes, you know, punish ourselves instead of wrapping our arms around us, because that is so much of what we need.
I'm sorry. It's hitting a nerve.
Yeah. It does for me too. It's a habit that I learned and honed over the years. And I think it's almost a process addiction because you learn it and then you use it. And like anything that we adopt, we're doing it to protect ourselves. And that's what I think a lot of people misunderstand. They think self-sabotage or perfectionism and punishment, that they're not good for us, but they are just, that they're forms of self-harm in some ways, but not at all. They're actually forms of self-protection that just aren't working. We are trying to protect ourselves, to keep ourselves in the right path, doing the right thing in order to achieve what we want. Only it doesn't really work that way. And so with ourselves, sometimes that's really hard to see. But if you picture yourself as a child that's outside of you, you know, and you put that third person image can be really useful, because if it's you and that child has a fear, you're not going to spank them. You're not going to send them away just because they're scared.
Right.
So I think, interestingly, the self-empathy and self-compassion can be, and was for me, the biggest, ways that really make the difference.
And I think, yeah, I think once you start acknowledging, like you were saying, if you can acknowledge that you need to give yourself that grace and truly help yourself and not punish yourself for the way you feel and work through it, that just getting over that is so helpful in making any movement forward. So
would you mind telling us why it touched a nerve?
I think fear is probably the biggest thing that I deal with. You try not to live your life in fear, but going through the life I've had, there's been a lot of fear. So I think it's just a repeated theme.
Yeah. That level of uncertainty was something that's so important to you, your life. That's that would do it.
Yeah. And that's why I said it's so important for people to understand that there's nothing wrong with you when you have these feelings. It's just understanding how to handle them, how to process them so that you're not a victim to them.
Yeah. Because it does change, you know, if you're sort of intentionally bringing up the fear and you're trying to look at it and yourself with self-empathy, then you're in a position of power versus that the victimhood, right, when it's invisible and it's kind of making you prey to everything that's happening to you.
And it's, you know, I think the avoidance of feeling fear is because you're trying to be strong. And so you're not going to let the fear take over. You're going to control it. And so by not feeling it, you're controlling it in your mind. That's what you see. And like you've been saying, to actually feel it and take the power away from it when you feel it is contradictory to what I think second nature you do. So that's where that, like you were saying, a pivot point is, where you get to the point where what you're doing isn't working and you really need to find another avenue, something that you can do to really address it.
Yeah. I mean, I've had clients start down that journey and come back and say, "You're crazy. This doesn't work. It's just making everything worse. I'm not trying this again."
But do you get, like, there's a hump that you have to get over? I think, you know, it's not going to be you try it and everything's fixed in 5 minutes. You have to, like you said, work through that and get over the hump to the point where you lessen the power that it has. And you have to, unfortunately, feel it to get over the hump.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that is the unfortunate part. Believe me, I kept looking for a magic wand for a very long time because I did not want to feel those feelings. They are
right.
Feels like you're down in the mud. Right. But there are, you know, I had a client who was very resistant to this, and feeling emotions was not something she did well. And then I got a voicemail from her, and she was sobbing, and she had just sat down and done some of the techniques we talked about, and she was able to feel love for herself for the very first time in her life. And she's almost 40. Wow. And that was a big moment for her.
That's a big moment for anyone. I mean, there's a lot of people that are hurting right now.
Yeah, because I think a lot of people have a tendency, if they're not blaming others, to blame themselves, because we want to fix it, right? Whatever that problem that's bothering us, we want to fix it, change it. And so if related to the control you were talking about earlier, if we make it our fault, well, then that gives us something to work on. And that makes us feel like we can fix it. But that's part of where that punishment comes in, because usually whatever's happened, "Oh, honey, it wasn't your fault." That's what I say to myself a lot.
Yeah. And it pulls you out of the thick of it, and you can see it from a different perspective.
Yeah. It's that idea that the emotion is so big, we often fuse with it and we feel we are the emotion. And then, of course, we want to push it away. So where we can kind of practice self-awareness, and you can do that lots of different ways. You know, there's the sort of technical term is called interoception. So you can literally feel the physical sensations within your body. And the better you are at this, the more emotionally capable you are, is what studies are showing. So where you can just sit very quietly and you can feel your heartbeat, that says that you're in tune with your body. So the stiller you can get and the better you can get at in any situation, being able to connect to and feel your heart beating means that you are increasing your self-awareness in a way that when the emotion arrives, you will be able to connect to that and see yourself as separate from that emotion. And in that small little space, you find wiggle room, essentially. Mm-hmm. And in that wiggle room, you know, that's the route to freedom. Because where the fear is so big that you can't see through it, or where the anger is just all-encompassing, if you can connect to that, or just, you know, there's lots of different mindfulness techniques where you connect to your body, and it just takes you out of your mind and out of your emotions even, and just takes you into the physical present moment.
Right, right.
And so all of that is just essentially works on self-awareness, which really helps you kind of separate. And then just realizing that, well, it's a terrible emotion. It feels terrible, but it isn't going to kill you. In fact, it might actually make you stronger if you learn to process it and release it. But ignoring it, denying it, that doesn't make you stronger. It just makes you prey to the invisibles.
Yeah. And that's why I said that this conversation today is truly invaluable. And I know what I've gotten out of it. I can only imagine, you know, how many people out there really need this. And to have this opportunity to speak with you, to get this understanding of how deep this goes, but at the same time, how much we can obtain it. It's there. It's something that's achievable, and it takes time. It takes practice. It's going to be uncomfortable, but yet we have the opportunity to make those changes and make our lives better and to actually feel fulfilled and not live in fear, anger, whatever emotion it is that's holding you back.
And that's exactly right. If there's one takeaway that the audience has from today, it's that you don't grow up learning these skills. We're not taught social and emotional learning like math and science. You don't sit down with a situation. If I encounter something horrible in life and it makes me feel scared and uncertain, what do I do? You don't practice these situations in school, but you can learn these skills. They're all scientifically evidence-based, and you can learn them and you can practice them, and they are life-changing.
Well, I hope that anybody listening today, even though this is a deep conversation and a very emotional conversation, they also have a glimmer of hope. I hope they have some sort of feeling of empowerment feel inspired to continue their journey, to work through these things, to know that there is light at the end of the tunnel and you don't have to stay stuck where you're at, that feeling the things that you feel is okay, and working through that is a process, and you have to be kind to yourself while you do it.
That is an absolutely beautiful summary. I don't have anything to add to it. It's gorgeous.
Thank you, Megan. Thank you so much for your insight and for sharing your story of everything you've been through that has helped you see what needed to happen in your own life. And that because of that experience, you're able to help other people. And that is a huge blessing to anyone who's ever met you, because you are definitely a gem. I appreciate all your knowledge, and I really thank you for your time today.
Well, thank you so much for the opportunity. I think your podcast is incredibly critical. It is really giving people a lifeline. So thank you very much for letting me be a part of it. It's a privilege.
Thanks so much for listening to my chat with Megan. This raw and soulful episode gives us hope that we can free ourselves from our emotions. When you find that what you're doing isn't working anymore, it's time to seize the day. See past the fear and anger to live a more empowered life. This was an emotional one for me, and I share this because I know that others are on this same journey. Megan has such a wonderful outlook and understanding of what it's like to go through heartbreak and make the decision to heal and find fulfillment. I am so happy she joined me on this episode. I learned so much from her today. You can find out more about Megan and her coaching on her website at meganwarrencoaching.com. The link will be in the episode description. If you or someone you care about would like to share their experience or know of an organization to help even just one person, please message me through my website or social media at Sailing Through Life Podcast. How do you sail through life? Join me on this endeavor. I would love to grow this caring support community. You can support us by following, reviewing, and sharing. When you make a contribution, you will also help us to reach more listeners and make their stories matter. This will also help me grow the show and continue my passion to reach others with my messages of hope and empowerment. Please visit my website to find out more at sailingthroughlifepodcast.wordpress.com. Thanks again. Chat with you next time.